Welcome to our Worldwide Network for Success, WWYNS, your dedicated business radio station. The mission of our station is to help you learn how successful managers and business owners direct their businesses, capitalize on opportunities, and overcome adversity. Our objective is to help you understand and apply their insights, then use your expertise in your own business or job so that you can become more successful. Our program, The Leading Edge of Supply Chain Management, is brought to you by Supply Chain Optimizers. SCO is a full-service logistics company known for providing personalized, end-to-end cost-saving tools and techniques focused on improving the hundreds of opportunities firms have hidden within their supply chain activities. SCO has leading-edge capability in transportation solutions, international operations, network optimization, and lead logistics outsourcing. SCO also specializes in packaging optimization, a risk-free offering where we are paid on a gain-sharing basis for the savings we are able to generate for our clients. The key strength of SCO is in the experience of our group to provide practical solutions. Virtually all of our staff has served extensively at the VP level in some facet of supply chain or financial operations. SCO has delivered millions of dollars in annual savings for some of the leading global businesses. Our packaging optimization solutions have traditionally produced savings in the 10 to 20% range of the total supply chain cost. Another result has been significant improvements in our clients' sustainability, with dramatic reductions in the use of corrugated, trucks on the road, etc. SCO says, "We help clients improve the bottom line profit by optimizing their supply chains." And now, here is your host, Joe Camara.
This is Joe Camara, your host for today's edition of the Worldwide Network for Success Business Station, WWYNS. Joining me is Mike Malozzi of Soma Sushi. Welcome, Mike.
Well, Joe, glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. Today, the topic for this hour is the food service business. To help you get the maximum benefit from the time you spend with us, we have designed this station for you, managers, business owners, and those determined to succeed. Our goal each week is to provide you with at least one actionable idea that you can use in your business or job. Mike, I know your business is fairly interesting because I know it intimately, but when someone asks you how you describe your business, what do you say?
Well, I simply say I'm in the food service business, and then naturally they'll ask, well, there's a lot of food in the world, so what specifically do you provide? And then I get into the fact that we produce sushi every day.
Great. How'd you get started?
Good question. Like most entrepreneurs, I started on a part-time basis. I had spent a number of years in the insurance business and was close to retirement. Didn't think I wanted to fully retire, and a friend of mine who had this business said, why don't you come in part-time and work around and give us a hand, which I did. One thing led to another, and some years down the road, my wife and two other girls decided to buy the company.
Great. If you were to describe your mission, organization's mission, what would you say your mission statement is?
Well, we like to promote the fact that we make sushi fresh daily. So made fresh daily is our mission statement.
You've talked a little bit about your business. Can you give us a little bit more detail about the kinds of things you produce and where you produce them and how it works?
Yeah, we found that our niche market is universities, colleges, and so forth. So we do have a standalone food court at the University of Buffalo, which we produce for campus right there. We also have a kitchen that we produce and deliver to other colleges and schools around Western New York.
So basically you're serving schools, but don't you have a little program in the summertime that's kind of a special program?
Well, this year we did try to expand, and we decided to open up a small food court in the Niagara Falls area. And we just thought it would be a good idea since we had chefs that wanted to work all year round. And I would lay them off in the summertime, and there's always a problem of not getting them back when school opens in the fall. So we're doing that, and this is our first year, and it's a little early to tell you if we're going to do it again next year.
Well, I think you've been a little disappointed by the results because some of special challenges you've had. So what are some of the challenges that you've experienced?
Well, because you're limited as far as the marketing is concerned, because these are just tourists, 90% tourists. You don't have a lot of local trade. And tourists are always in a hurry, and there's other varieties and so forth that they can choose from. If it's a nice day, they may not come into the food court. If it's a rainy day, we notice we get a lot busier. The other challenge is that we rely heavily on bus traffic. So when these tour bus comes in and they unload their passengers, there's many ways they can go. And we hopefully that they come into the building and then take a choice from us, plus the other 8 vendors that have are selling food in the food court.
Great. I know over time you've kind of developed new products. How have you gone about doing that? What's your system for testing new products?
Well, we found that just talking to the students when we're on campus is a great way to introduce new products, because they'll come up and they'll mention, gee, did you do this? I was on vacation, we had sushi in this place, and they have this kind of roll and that kind of roll. So we'll experiment with it, and we'll have some tasting. And the chefs have a carte blanche kind of thing that they are allowed to experiment, come up with something that looks like it's going to be appetizing, and we don't put any boundaries on them.
So the feedback you get directly is sales, correct? I mean, if something sells well, then you'll keep doing it, or...?
Well, yeah, if it's not broke, you don't want to fix it, because you're relying on your base items that you're going to sell constantly. But it's also good to have some variety mixed in there, and the change is good also.
You mentioned a little bit about marketing challenges in a tourist area. What about your marketing methods on campus?
Well, on campus, you have a captive audience. So naturally, the marketing you do is local school newspapers, along with billboards, bus ads, and word of mouth. We find word of mouth really makes a big difference, especially with the students. They're all on Facebook and Twitter and so forth. So if you produce something good or there's something nice that they like, they'll be the first ones to tell their friends about it. Conversely, if you produce something that isn't so nice, again, they'll be the first ones to tell their friends about it. So we find it's a little different marketing strategy, because you have a captive audience in a closed community.
So you mentioned Facebook and Twitter. Have you developed a method to follow or kind of monitor what kind of results or what kind of word-of-mouth advertising you're getting?
Yeah, we look at it constantly, especially during the school year. Usually what I do is, since we hire between 8 and 9 students to help with cashiering and cleaning up and prep work, one of them or two of them will take control of the Facebook account, and they'll keep an eye on it every day.
Great. So you're getting direct feedback on your Facebook account.
Right.
Correct? Right. Yeah, great. Do you tweet any specials during the month or during the week to get somebody to come in and try something new?
Every week. We promote something, whether it's special or not, but we'll promote a special roll. Like we'll say, this week we're promoting the dragon roll and so forth. And it's just... like most restaurants do, when the waitress comes around and she says, I'm going to read you the specials that we have today, and they're not on the menu. It's not a special price, it's just a special that they're here.
Well, I know you're talking mainly about serving students directly from your food kiosk. What other things are you doing to try to capture, let's say, some of the business for meetings and things that are on campus?
Well, we do advertise the fact that we have a small catering operation also that will produce platters of sushi and other things if you want. So instead of chicken and pizza wings at their next faculty meeting or a student association meeting, we suggest that they might want to take a look at ordering party platters.
So if somebody off campus wanted to order a party platter, could they do that as well?
Oh, absolutely. You can go on our website. It's just somasushi.com. And you could take a look at the different varieties we have to offer, and you could order it, and we'll deliver it right to you.
Oh, you deliver. Tell us a little bit more about your delivery activities.
Well, again, because we work early in the morning when we produce this stuff, it's somewhat difficult for people to come and pick things up. So we have a delivery service that if you order platters or 2 platters, whatever the minimum is, as long as you give us a couple of days, we'll deliver it to you on the day that you need it.
And beside the central location that you have in the Student Union, you provide some of your sushi to some satellite operations too, don't you?
Exactly. There's on campus, naturally we have the kiosk, but we also deliver to 5 other locations within the University of Buffalo system, dining halls and so forth, that they have fresh sushi every day.
Great. I know, and since you're in the student union, there are other competitors around. How do you think you do in comparison to them, and how are your services priced in comparison to them?
Well, we're real careful with pricing. We monitor it weekly. We go around the community at the other sushi places, and we take a look what their pricing is and so forth. It's a little difficult at times because we found the competition will change the ounces. If you go in the afternoon, you may only get a 5-ounce California roll at one price, but then you go at dinner time, now there's a 7 or 8-ounce California roll. We make our rolls more consistent. It's 8 ounces constantly, no matter if you come there at noon or if you come there at 5 o'clock. So what you get is what we have every day, day in and day out.
I know you have a lot of international students on campus. So you have some people from Japan who are really familiar with sushi because they've had it all their lives. How do you think, what kind of feedback do you get from them about your sushi?
Oh, we get great feedback from them, great feedback. I mean, you know, these kids are honest in Japan, China, Malaysia, Korea. There's a huge Asian population at the university system. And these kids are our best customers, and actually they're our best workers because they do work for us also.
Great. Would you say your services are unique or the products you serve are unique in some fashion?
Yes, I would think so. Sushi trend has been getting bigger and bigger every year. There's other companies out there doing similar to what we're doing, so we've got to keep on top of it. But the healthy eating aspect, which is taking hold now also in the high schools, you see a lot of concerns being made to get rid of the fat and the starches and let's start putting some healthy food in. We believe sushi made properly is probably one of the healthier foods you could find on campus.
We've talked a lot about the activities at the University of Buffalo. What other campuses do you serve and other locations?
Well, right now we have, for the last 10 years, have been servicing Fredonia, University of Fredonia. They're a great school, great people to work with. So we deliver every day, 6 days a week, and provide them with fresh sushi.
This may be sound like it's a little off the wall, but if you got a call from someone in Hong Kong who's listening to our program, what kind of advice would you give them about providing sushi services in their location?
Well, that might be difficult since I'm not familiar with the demographics where they are or whatever, but I would say to any advice I would give to anybody, if you develop a product and you're comfortable with it, and it's of high quality, and you keep the quality the same all the time. You don't change the recipe. You just keep at doing what you do best and have a passion for it. If you don't have a passion, then don't get into it because it's not going to work. But if you have a passion and love and determination that you want to succeed, go for it.
Okay, so I'm going to change the question a little bit. Let's say you got a call from somebody at the University of Utah who wanted to provide sushi on campus because there wasn't that option. What advice would you give them?
Well, I'd say it would be a great option, but let's do some homework first. You know, let's get some questionnaires out to your students, you know, Twitter, tweet, whatever you have to do, Facebook, prior to even attempting to put it on campus. And then talk to me, talk to other schools that have it. And then once you determine that you're going to do it, we also have another business that we have with Soma Sushi, is we'll actually act as consultants. You fly us into Utah, we'll spend 2 or 3 days, whatever it is, take a look at what you have, draw up some plans, and then get back to you with a proposal, what it would cost you to start up, what the products would be, and help you try to find the chefs. We don't have a training facility, unfortunately, but there's enough good sushi chefs around that you could pick a head chef, and then he could do the training and so forth. But we would be there to consult you all the way through.
So in this particular kind of a situation, let's assume there weren't a lot of sushi chefs in Utah. Would you be able to train someone, let's say here, if they came to the unit you have in Buffalo and show them how to use sushi and make it?
Absolutely. If the school and the other state wanted to send a couple people to Buffalo, and we would keep them for a week to 10 days and come up with some kind of intensive training program, basic sushi cuts can be learned in that amount of time. You get into the more intricate cuts and sashimi and so forth, and you start carving little bears out of radishes and stuff. That's an art unto itself. But when you're dealing with college students and on campus, you have to be careful with price because these are students. So you're not going to be offering exotic sushi dishes on campus. You know, it's going to be 12 to 15 basic sushi rolls plus the seaweed salad and crab salad and so forth.
So one of obviously the topics you're talking about is pricing. How do you make sure you keep good control of your profitability and pricing situation?
Again, it's tough, and you have to be on top of it all the time. You don't want to waste anything, and since we have a model that it's made fresh daily, we do not resell anything the next day. We don't reclaim anything. We just eliminate it that evening if it's not sold. So it takes a lot of work, and we try to portion control. Again, ours is an 8-ounce sushi roll, and that means there's so much rice, there's so much vegetables, and so much of the meat. The shrimp, the crab, the salmon, whatever it is. So we watch the portion controls, and that helps us a lot. And right. The fact that we're right there on campus, we don't have to have a lot of extra laying around like you would other places. Somebody could come up to us and say, gee, do you have any more California rolls? And I say, no, but we'll make you one. And it takes a couple of minutes, and we hand it to them, and they're happy.
Our program, The Leading Edge of Supply Chain Management, is brought to you by Supply Chain Optimizers. SCO is a full-service logistics company known for providing personalized, end-to-end, cost-saving tools and techniques focused on improving the hundreds of opportunities firms have hidden within their supply chain activities. SCO has leading-edge capability in transportation solutions, international operations, network optimization, and lead logistics outsourcing. SCO also specializes in packaging optimization, a risk-free offering where we are paid on a gain-sharing basis for the savings we are able to generate for our clients. The key strength of SCO is in the experience of our group to provide practical solutions. Virtually all of our staff has served extensively at the VP level in some facet of supply chain or financial operations. SCO has delivered millions of dollars in annual savings for some of the leading global businesses. Our packaging optimization solutions have traditionally produced savings in the 10 to 20% range of the total supply chain cost. Another result has been significant improvements in our clients' sustainability, with dramatic reductions in the use of corrugated, trucks on the road, etc. SCO says, "We help clients improve the bottom line profit by optimizing their supply chains." Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.networkforsuccess.com for more detail. That's network, the number 4, success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6.
Welcome back to part 2 of your Worldwide Network for Success business station, WWYNS. Today, we've been talking with Mike Malozzi. Our topic for this session is Mike's food service business, which focuses on sushi, which he's been telling us about in depth. One of the things we're trying to do is make sure we understand all the facets of his business. You mentioned earlier about hiring students off campus. Is that a challenge or is that really easy to do?
Actually, we found it quite easy. We actually have an excess of people that want to work for us. It's just word of mouth and prior year students. They all recommend that new kids coming in that it would be a good place to work, and we try to promote that. So we never had a problem getting students. And what we found is a lot of these students, this is their first job, you know. So it's kind of a cultural shock when they find out that, yeah, they occasionally have to put their hands in the dishwater and do some dishes and wipe down counters and take temperatures and maybe peel some carrots and so forth. So, but they're great at it, and once they're shown how to do it, it's not a problem. And they're good kids. They really are.
I understand sometimes they're maybe not as reliable because they have other responsibilities, What do you do in an emergency when a student, let's say, doesn't show up?
Well, we found out through trial and error that, again, being their first job in a lot of cases and being from another country, the protocol and the format that you should follow if you're not going to be in work the next day is to call a day or two ahead of time and let you know because you got an exam scheduled and so forth. What we found, they would come in at 10 o'clock and tell us they can't be there at 11 because they have an exam. And you look at them and you say, well, did you know you had the exam? Oh, yeah. And they just couldn't grasp the concept that, you know, courtesy to do that. So we address that. What we do is we just have a call-in system. Every student that works for us has the number of all the students that work for us. So it's their job to try and make an effort that if they know they can't be at work tomorrow at 11, to call on the list and see if they can get a student to fill in. And it works pretty good.
Great. You've told us about some of your products and services, but haven't really described them much in detail. Is there a way to tell a listening audience about Sushi's range of products that you can provide?
Well, the range would be unlimited technically because it's all up to the imagination of the chef. But for those of you who are familiar with sushi, and mainly for those who aren't familiar with sushi, forget the concept of raw fish. Everybody says sushi, raw fish. Well, yeah, there are some raw fish, but the majority of the cuts we sell are either cooked or smoked or boiled, so or processed. So it's not that everything is raw. And if it is raw, it's labeled on the package, so along with the allergens and so on and so forth. But we use combinations of shrimp, crab, salmon, tuna, eel, vegetables, cucumbers, avocados are big. Carrots, romaine lettuce, different type of summer wraps. There's vegetable rolls where there's no fish at all. So we have something for just about every taste. The main thing is the psychological problem is get over the fact that it's not raw fish.
Great. Now, I know you've been in business quite a while. Do you have plans for expanding or moving outside of the Western New York area?
Yes. Yes, we do. And we're constantly looking at other schools. And even if they're out of our geographic area, if it's a big enough school and we think we could put something together, we'll entertain the thought and go down there and talk to them and work some kind of deal out that they have enough room and the demographics look good. We'll come up with a team and we'll send them down there.
So, as we were talking about with the University of Utah, if there was a local opportunity, you could basically take the same idea and apply it to a school that was much closer near, you know,
yeah,
at home.
Fortunately, we've gone through the growing pains and come down with a very smooth operation. It's just phenomenal. It works like clockwork when it's done right. From ordering, where to buy from, and knowing the seasons as far as produce prices, getting up high and then dropping down low and so forth. Worrying about the different controls on tuna that they have as far as how much you could catch tuna now, and you have to use a hook instead of a net. And, you know, the yellowfin tuna is basically what we use because bluefin tuna, which is such a delicacy in Japan, is just so expensive. You know, you'd have to, it's prohibitive on campus. It's as simple as that. But yeah, if someone wanted us to come down there and we saw an opportunity that we could do what we've done up here, yeah, it's a business opportunity, and like any businessman, yeah, we'll look at it.
Well, so I guess, you know, in a sense, we're talking about what your vision for the future might be. Do you see that you'll have, let's say, 3 or 4 or 5 more locations in the next 5 years?
Yeah, in the next 3 years, we'd like to expand at least 3 more locations, 1 a year, and in the next 5 years, probably have another 4 or 5 after that.
Okay, let's say someone was interested in getting into a business like this. Would there be a way for them to work with you directly, or would they have to start up on their own?
Well, we don't have any apprenticeship program or anything like that. But again, if an individual was interested in starting and he or she was sincere about it and wanted our help, we would probably be interested in talking to them.
So what would be the top three steps to getting started? I mean, you're going to talk with them. What would come next?
Well, they'd have to have some knowledge of the food service business because it's complicated. You know, that would be the first one. The second one is they have to have, like you said before, a passion, desire to succeed, and the next one would be a commitment on their part, both financially and physically.
Uh-huh. Maybe visiting you at your UB location might be a good way to introduce themselves. So a student that was studying at a college of either culinary college or a food service or hotel service college might be a good person to come and talk with you?
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's going to be a new culinary college in the Niagara Falls area that's going to be opening, I believe, September this year, or close to it, and it's going to be pretty large unit.
Oh, great. Tell us about your website. I know you have a special website for special things. What can you tell us about those?
Well, what we decided to do last year, since we were ordering a lot of product to make our sushi product, and that is that we decided to do a grocery business. We do sell groceries to the schools we deal with, whether it's rice or soy sauces, fortune cookies, and so on. So we decided to open it up. We found that there was a need on campuses for people to get food that they're accustomed to in their home country. One of the biggest complaints with foreign students coming on campus is they can't get food that they're accustomed to. We may think we have Asian food on campus, but it's not like they're used to eating at home. If you go into a Chinese restaurant here in the States, that's not how Chinese people eat. Trust me. they don't even eat that stuff. So, again, there's certain rices that they like, there's certain flavorings that they like, and so forth. So we're trying to provide a list of foods that they could order, and then we would have a delivery system where twice a week we would deliver on or off campus, and most of the foods are dry foods and vegetables.
So what's the basic process? They go online?
Go online. They look at our inventory, they order it, they give us the address, and we take credit cards and pay for it. We send them a confirmation that we got their order, and there's a time frame that we get, a window of roughly an hour and a half that we would deliver. And since most of the kids live in either dorms or complexes and so forth, you're going to see more than one order come in, so it's not like we're just dropping there, and it works out pretty good. Kids like it. They appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Mike. This has been very educational. As you know, every Friday, our Network for Success hosts its executive briefing. Our briefing enables our guests to meet our speakers in a one-on-one relationship. This Friday, we'll be exploring a key Minimax recommendation by one of our guests. If you have time and you'd like to visit one of our briefings, they're free. Our executive briefings start promptly at 12 o'clock and include lunch. Feel free to join us for this lively hour of discussion and networking. Please call us at 716-634-7013 for a reservation. Be sure to tell us if you're a vegetarian, and Mike will provide you with some vegetarian sushi or other options. We'd like to thank Mike from Soma Sushi for sharing his ideas with us. You have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing on our website as a free member. If you have any questions or would like to participate in a future program, call 716-634 anytime, day or night. That's 716-634-7013. I hope you enjoyed our topic today and look forward to your listening to us in the future. Have a good day. See you soon. Bye.
Our program, The Leading Edge of Supply Chain Management, is brought to you by Supply Chain Optimizers. SCO is a full-service logistics company known for providing personalized, end-to-end, cost-saving tools and techniques focused on improving the hundreds of opportunities firms have hidden within their supply chain activities. SCO has leading-edge capability in transportation solutions, international operations, network optimization, and lead logistics outsourcing. SCO also specializes in packaging optimization, a risk-free offering where we are paid on a gain-sharing basis for the savings we are able to generate for our clients. The key strength of SEO is in the experience of our group to provide practical solutions. Virtually all of our staff has served extensively at the VP level in some facet of supply chain or financial operations. SEO has delivered millions of dollars in annual savings for some of the leading global businesses. Our packaging optimization solutions have traditionally produced savings in the 10 to 20% range of the total supply chain cost. Another result has been significant improvements in our clients' sustainability, with dramatic reductions in the use of corrugated, trucks on the road, etc. SEO says, "We help clients improve the bottom line profit by optimizing their supply chains."
YNS is a full-service integrated marketing services firm. We develop and deliver a sophisticated, custom-made system called Integrated Marketing Square. The Square designation results from the marriage between a highly successful legacy system and the digital world's many free marketing tools. This marriage produces exponential results for our customers. YNS helps our customers get the IMS Squared benefits and the most valuable marketing system they will ever use. The goals of your network for success are to, 1, provide you with up to a 10-to-1 return on your marketing investments, 2, enable you to achieve better marketing results and sales results for less, 3, get the IMS Squared benefits, and 4, the bottom line is to help your customers build their business. To talk to us personally, call 575-RESULT-6. That's 575-RESULT-6, or in numbers, 575-737-8586, 575-737-8586, or visit us on the web at www.network4success.com.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.network4success.com for more detail. That's network4success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6.
Whether you're a professional, a business owner, or a high-level manager, our goal with each program is to provide you with at least one actionable idea you can implement immediately to build your success in business. And today we're talking about, we're going to be answering the question, why would your business want to host a radio program? And our guest today is Joe Camara, President of Consulting Task Force. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks, James.
And this topic, it seems to me this is something that you know a fair bit, fair amount of information about as well as I, and I'm looking forward to the discussion. Why don't we introduce our listeners to the idea of radio and why we think and why you think radio works.
Well, if we think about radio as an advertising medium, I guess one of the things that we think that it works as a reason that it works is that basically there's a lot of frequency. You can, if you're buying ads or commercials, you can get a lot of repetition, and if people are listening on a regular basis to a particular type of radio program, people hear the same message over and over again and get accustomed to it. There's some research that indicates that people tend not to take action until they've heard or seen an ad more than 9 times. And so the radio is a good medium to reach the kind of customer you want. And when we talk about the kind of customer you want, we're talking about target marketing. We're talking about dealing directly with the kind of customer you want to attract. So in our case, so the reason we like to be on the Business Radio Network is, I guess, for obvious reasons, we want to reach business listeners. And so because the Business Radio Network exists, so we're able to tap into people that either have a financial interest, an interest in improving their success or improving their business, and so that's good for us. In many ways, and we all are familiar with commercials that are more than just image commercials, we can promote or tend to encourage people to take action, to call our number if they want to tape, or call our number if they're interested in building their business or getting some information from us. And so for that reason, it's another good mechanism that can work. Certainly that works in all the other advertising media, but with the right ads, it can certainly be a valuable thing. The last thing is we think it's a very valuable tool in creating credibility. It's one of those things that little companies don't do very much of, especially host a radio program. They may run commercials, but in terms of hosting a program, which is one of the things we're going to focus on, most companies really don't do that. So it's helping establish our credibility and helping set us apart from our competitors who don't have the same tools to use that we do.
So you've talked about the radio program, the long format program. You've also talked about commercials in the context of repetition and frequency. And you've also talked about those same things in terms of credibility and targeting your marketing. Do you have to be on a radio station that targets a market, or is it more important, and is the real point of having a long format program the idea that people are going to tune into your program because of the specific topic, if it has to do with real estate or if it has to do with finance or business?
Well, I would say if we were on some other radio stations that focus on the younger market, 12 to 21-year-olds, we'd be wasting our time. They're not going to buy our services. So I think the targeting is certainly an important element. Now, if you have a mixed audience, let's say your audience is 34 to 59 or 52, whatever the demographics are supposed to be, and of those there are listeners who are in business, certainly we could be on a radio station that does that, and in fact we may be going to that, have that opportunity. But the point is that we're better off by targeting. I think one of the ideas that I think appeals to me about the targeted nature of radio is that it's like a magazine. If you're trying to reach hunters, there's no sense in advertising in a magazine that's advertising swimsuits. And so for us, I think the targeting idea is an important one. And the same analogy could be made for magazines or TV. I think cable's going to force TV to go in the same direction that radio and magazines have gone, and they're going to be highly targeted type stations. And in fact, CNN is a good example, or ESPN with sports is a good example, where people who have those kinds of products want to be on those kinds of stations because they gather listeners that have an interest in the products that they're selling.
So you're suggesting that radio offers us a first level of targeting, but you're also then suggesting that the value of a long format program over a commercial is that you can further target and attract listeners by the nature of the program you have.
Sure. I doubt that people who are not interested in business continue to listen to us. If OJ's on and they tuned in for OJ, then we come on and they're not interested in business at all, or business topics are challenging their mind, they're going to tune out. They're going to go to another station of some sort. And so that's great, because we're reaching the kind of people we want to reach, and the people who aren't interested in listening to us are gone.
What are the other reasons that perhaps a program, a long-format radio program, would be better than a series of commercials?
Well, let's just think about the multidimensionality. If you followed our programs at all, anybody who's listened over a period of time knows that we've hosted, for instance, the president of banks. We've hosted presidents of manufacturing firms and all different kinds of things. That is good for us because it helps us associate with people who are important people in the business community. So that in our case, it demonstrates a multidimensionality that I think our competitors just can't provide for the most part. One of the things we're doing now is giving information. A commercial is great for repetitious kind of information, but if somebody's looking for a detailed kind of information, and we get people requesting our tapes all the time, they want to know what we have to say in greater depth. So we wouldn't have the opportunity to do that unless we had a huge number of commercials explaining something in detail over a period of time. So we can get into something in more depth, just as Bill Breslin does, or just as any other of our other show hosts that are talking about topics of particular in-depth information. I also think that it gives a different image than the average commercial gives. It's not a commercial, in a sense. It's information giving. And if somebody likes information giving rather than receiving a hard sell, they like the idea that they're getting something of value, even though they're not paying for it directly. They're investing their time and effort, and so that gives us an opportunity to create an image that I think a commercial would not be able to give us. Now, there may be other formats, and when we first started in radio, we used other formats that were information-oriented. I'm not saying you have to have a show or that you have to have a half-an-hour show, but certainly there's a value there that we wouldn't be able to get just from commercials.
So it's not just the time, it's not just what you say, but it's how you use that time, whether it's an interview, whether it's information giving. What other ways can you use a long format program to add value to your marketing?
Well, I don't know. I guess I've covered most of the ones that I have. I guess to me, there are probably a million ways. It depends on your creativity. We could probably do a call-in show. We've chosen not to do that because we like to focus on a particular topic and give good information, whereas a call-in show is kind of responding to needs. That's certainly a good format and might work for, oh, in fact, we helped co-host a program that was real estate-focused for another firm on a different station, and they liked the call-in format. It gave them the opportunity to come and really not be as prepared as we might think we should be for an information-giving show, but they could just respond off the cuff and have a little bit more humor maybe. That's something we don't do particularly well, but nevertheless, somebody who's got good humor skills, that would be an element they could add that might show a different dimension to their capabilities.
So the longer format gives you an opportunity then to control the programming that's on the air, give the listener something very specific to listen to, gives you an opportunity to give out more information and educate your listener, as well as position yourself as a credible, knowledgeable information giver. I also imagine that it allows you also to use commercials. So you don't have to, it gives you much more flexibility. You can use a tip, which is might be 2 or 3 minutes long, a long format, which is a half hour, maybe 2 or 3 10-minute segments, or just a 30-second or a minute commercial.
Sure.
Okay. Anything else that we can that you've done particularly that has leveraged the value of a commercial, like perhaps giving it longevity, either giving, you mentioned tapes, I guess. I'm going to give away the answer, but tapes seems to me to be another opportunity to make that investment in the program longer lived.
Sure. Well, it's like I guess I recommend to people who take some of my seminars that if you're going to write an article and get it published, it's not a good idea to let it sit in the drawer after the fact. Just the fact that it was in a magazine has a certain shelf life, but I recommend to people that they take that article and use it as part of their promotional tools, and that's what we do with tapes. We send tapes to people that we think might be interested in the topic we've talked about or who might be interested in having their own radio program and want to join us in terms of making a relationship with us, a sponsor or whatever it happens to be. So we use those tapes for marketing tools very effectively, I think.
Great. You're listening to your Network for Success. We're talking with Joe Camara, President of Consulting Task Force, and we're talking about answers to the question, why would your business want to host a radio program? We'll be back after these words.
Now more than ever, it's important to take a systematic approach to achieve your business and personal goals. Consulting Task Force's Network for Success is a program that provides the contacts, knowledge, and skills you need today and beyond. Earn a 5-to-1 return from your investment in Network for Success through more than 800 introductions to key business decision makers and 250 training and educational opportunities on advanced and timely issues important to the growth of your business. Take advantage of face-to-face contacts, personal referrals, and bottom-line ideas on every functional area of business. For a short time, $99 can buy you a 12-month Network for Success membership. Call CTF at 634-7013 for information. 634-7013. Ask about the guarantee. Call 634-7013.
Welcome back to your Network for Success. For our listeners, cassette copies of all programs are available by giving us a call at 634-7013. You can call CTF 24 hours a day. That number again is 634-7013. We have more than 550 titles that you can choose from if you have an interest. We probably have the information. Joe, we're talking about why a business would want to host a radio program and more generally take advantage of perhaps a long format the longer format on the radio. What kinds of companies or businesses are best suited for this kind of media?
Well, I'm not sure every company is suited for this medium. I think a company that is fairly focused in its market and doesn't have a wide variety of products probably would have a great deal of difficulty doing what we do simply because they're narrowly focused, especially if they have a narrow product line. I think that they would have difficulty doing the information giving we have about their product line. But if they were using it for the purpose of hosting as we do, then certainly any company could use this because it provides all the things we've talked about in terms of credibility and exposure and so on over the life of the period of the time that they're on. And if they use it in the ways we do, not just as their only marketing element, but only as part of a marketing element, then there are lots of different things they can do, for instance, with the tapes and so on, just as we do. So I think this could be good for any kind of a firm, depending on their goals. And if some of their goals are to expose themselves over a long period of time and take the chance that they are going to have a program that people are going to be interested in listening to, then I think almost any kind of firm could use this program.
And it seems to me that what you're doing when you have a long format program is doing just what they do on TV. You're creating a half hour or an hour block of time that people you expect will tune in to watch. Even if, you know, we watch TV, we might watch 5 or 6 or 20 channels during the course of a week. The same could be said then for radio. And would you suggest then doing the same thing that they do with TV, using other media elements to then promote that time that you're on the radio to increase listenership, to enhance the amount of exposure you get and the credibility you get, et cetera?
Well, I think you've hit it on the head. The ideal thing is not to just have only one marketing medium, period, whether you're using print or TV or radio, but to have multiple marketing media. And one of the things hopefully our listeners will recall is that we've talked about how we leverage our use of the radio time along with these other things. The tape was just one example. We try to do the same thing with print activities. We want to leverage our radio time by announcing our print in our print materials, what shows might be coming up and what people might have an interest in, and we send those to people that we want to be aware of our programming. So for us, it's a very useful tool in that leverage way. And again, if a company thinks about how to leverage its marketing activities and decides that radio is an interesting tool for them to use, they certainly may find other creative ways to leverage it depending on what other kinds of marketing activities they're doing on their own. So there's a real opportunity here if somebody has an interest in doing it.
So if I have a database or I can get a hold of a database, it would be very easy to cultivate those individuals to listen to the shows, to let them know of the topics. And as I'm doing that, as I'm telling them about the programs, I'm really educating them about all the things that I do or all the things that my company has an impact on.
Absolutely. And that's what marketing is all about. Now, marketing may or may not relate directly to the sales process. We think it does. And so if you look at marketing as an umbrella that has lots of spokes, some of those spokes may be radio, some are print, some are direct selling activities, the better they work together, the larger area your umbrella covers and the more effectively it stays up in the wind.
It sounds to me also, Joe, that if you're leveraging the investment in a radio show and creating low-cost tapes, you're finding a way to get more for your dollar. Is that the case?
Well, it's certainly the case for us. That's certainly the way we use it, and obviously anybody who can find a way to make their marketing dollar work more than in a singly focused way is getting more for their investment. So absolutely, we try to do that at every opportunity. It's the same idea of keeping an article that you've written in a news in a magazine of some sort, and using it as a marketing tool long after the magazine might have disappeared off the shelves that anybody might have.
So by adding a 32-cent stamp to an article, all of a sudden you've been able to target that article to a different person or expand the awareness that you've been able to develop.
Right. Well, I think that's the idea. Not only are you keeping the article alive and its utility alive, but now you're able to target it exactly to customers you think might have an interest. So if somebody has an interest in radio, we'll send them the tape on the radio about the radio. If they have an interest in print or affiliate marketing activities, we'll send them a tape about those things. So we're able to use those long after the actual program is over itself.
It seems to me that even a radio interview could then be turned into a print just by being transcribed. It could be turned into print, thrown into a newsletter. And so by doing one radio program, you could create an audio brochure, you could create something that's written that could go into your newsletter, so then you wouldn't have to spend time or invest to have a copywriter develop copy for a newsletter.
Sure, and something we don't do much of, although it has happened in the past. We've had guests that have had pictures taken and they've put those in their newsletter or in their promotional materials, because not only are we getting the credibility of using the radio, but the guests we have are using the credibility as well. In effect, by bringing them on, we're providing third-party endorsement for the types of businesses we have, and that's good for everybody.
So it sounds like that this is an argument for not just thinking about investing in any media alone. You have to think about how it's going to be impacted by this whole mix, as you talked about in the beginning, of marketing elements. If I'm going to use all the things that we discussed here today and invest in radio, I have to think, to get the most for my investment in radio, I have to think about investing in direct mail and then perhaps print.
Well, not necessarily as an add-on. I mean, what somebody may think about is adding radio to their mix that they already have. If they're already doing direct mail, or if they're already dealing with customers, let's say in a retail environment, and they're getting customers to come to them and they've got print materials, why not simply advertise your show along with those existing print materials? So you're not creating huge incremental investments, you're simply creating small incremental investments in those other media that you're currently using. Or you just simply may adjust your ads in the newspaper that you're using to say as heard on radio instead of as seen on TV or whatever it happens to be.
And that obviously adds credibility.
And it works.
So it sounds like I'm getting, with all these additional media elements and exponential ways, if you take two elements and now you can get four or five different uses out of it, you're exponentially increasing the value of the dollars you're spending and the return on your investment.
Absolutely.
Great ideas. You're listening to your Network for Success. We're talking with Joe Camara, President of Consulting Task Force, and we're addressing the issue, why would your business want to host a radio program? We'll be back with more after these words.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing in to our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.networkforsuccess.com for more details. That's network4success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6.
Welcome back to your Network for Success. There are more than 1,000 opportunities each year that focus on the guests and topics here we discuss in your Network for Success. 1,000 opportunities to build your business or build your personal success in business. And we welcome you to take advantage of those by calling Consulting Task Force 24 hours a day at 634-7013. Joe, we've talked a lot about the many unique and innovative ways that we've found to use radio. Can you give us an idea of some of the key points that our listeners should be taking with them as they turn off the radio and move forward with their day?
Well, if somebody wanted to do what we're doing, I guess all they'd need to do is listen. Our shows are reasonably informal, although they have a certain structure to them, as our listeners probably have already realized. What it would take to produce a program like ours is a relatively straightforward matter. You probably find somebody that has experience doing it, get somebody comfortable on the radio, find an interesting twist to the topic or the ideas that we're advocating. Certainly, I think, well, it would be nice if we had imitators, but so far we don't, so I don't think it's a crucial thing to us. But the point is, there's a lot of preparation work to get people to come to the show, make sure they show up on time, have a good show in terms of preparing them for what's going to be talked about. And then what we like to do is follow up and make sure that what happens after the program has been a worthwhile thing.
Well, it sounds like in the same way that we can leverage the value that we get from any media, we should also be able to leverage and spread the cost of the investment over a number of different people. Is that true? And if so, how could people that are listening and want to take advantage of this but may not think that they can afford it today, or that may not think that they can afford the time that you're talking about investing in this, how can they look for ways to maybe to spread that cost of that investment?
Well, you're right. This is not an inexpensive medium, but as our listeners know, we have sponsors. And so one of the ways we've been able to offset some of our costs are by getting sponsors who want to participate in the show or who just want the airtime. And so that's a good arrangement for us. And anyone, I think, again, could do that. It's a common tool that a lot of companies use to work together to provide some sort of an activity that they wouldn't be able to provide on their own. And so the idea of partnering, again, is another concept that we've talked a lot about, and certainly there's no reason you can't partner with other business, like-minded businesses or different businesses in a radio effort.
So when you talk about partnering and like-mindedness, it would seem to me that if I'm going to work with other businesses on a media or medium, they're going to have to all want to target the same or similar types of individuals.
Most likely, sure. It would make little sense, as I mentioned that example earlier, it would make little sense for a firm that wants to target hunters to be on a show that talked about the latest in women's fashions. The two don't really seem to me to go together. Certainly there may be women hunters and there may be men who wear women's clothes, but the numbers of those is probably small and it doesn't seem like a good fit. So what we'd want to do is get the greatest results we can by targeting hunters in general with hunting messages and people who are interested in women's fashions, clothing stores or whatever, to target that kind of a program.
So to avoid looking for competitors to work with, it sounds like we're talking about looking for people who have complementary types of services or products. So in our case, you're talking about a consulting firm perhaps partnering with an accounting firm or a law firm, or somebody that sells office equipment like copiers, or
commercial real estate, insurance.
Okay,
of
so
course.
So for an electronics, a consumer electronics type of organization, there might be other types of consumer goods that people need to be educated about that may be able to work together and to form some kind of alliance to do something like this and make it very profitable.
Absolutely. I'm sure the possibilities are endless. We certainly don't know all of them, but absolutely there's no reason in the world why an electronics firm couldn't find good partners. Maybe it'd be phone services, maybe it'd be travel services, things that the people in general are interested in that relate to electronics gadgetry.
Before the end of the show, I want to touch on one other question that comes to mind. These are great things to talk about in terms of multiple media elements and bringing lots of people together to make it happen. But if you don't have a fairly well-established management system, it seems to me to be fairly difficult to make this happen over a long time. Is that something that you found to be important and valuable to make all this that we're talking about come?
Well, isn't that true? Isn't that true for any business? Anything that's going to be worthwhile probably has to be managed. So, absolutely. Nothing happens by accident, in my opinion. You got to make it happen, and it's going to take a commitment on somebody's part. If somebody's not committed to the medium or interested in spending their time doing what we're doing, then certainly doesn't make sense.
And after all, the key to successful marketing is longevity and making it perpetual.
Consistency, sure.
Yeah. What kind of results can a business expect to get from making this kind of investment in this kind of new idea?
Well, a lot of it depends on your objectives and what your format of your program is, but some of the things that we find are that people recognize the name of our firm much more than they used to before we started radio. They certainly recognize us as individuals. We have created an image as a result. I think we've enhanced our credibility. We've done the target marketing we've talked about. But beyond those things, in terms of sales, it generates leads for us, creates appointments, and in fact has made sales, or helped us make sales. And so if somebody's looking for a good return on their investment, if they value the things we've talked about, then the investment, like in any marketing medium, is a valuable one.
YNS is a full-service integrated marketing services firm. We develop and deliver a sophisticated, custom-made system called Integrated Marketing Squared. The Squared designation results from the marriage between a highly successful legacy system and the digital world's many free marketing tools. This marriage produces exponential results for our customers. YNS helps our customers get the IMS Squared benefits and the most valuable marketing system they will ever use. The goals of your network for success are to, 1, provide you with up to a 10-to-1 return on your marketing investments, 2, enable you to achieve better marketing results and sales results for less, 3, get the IMS Squared benefits, and 4, the bottom line is to help your customers build their business. To talk to us personally, call 575-RESULT-6. That's 575-RESULT-6, or in numbers, 575-737-8586, 575-737-8586, or visit us on the web at www.network4success.com.
Remember, you have an opportunity to listen to this program via podcast by signing into our website and signing up as a member of YNS. This free sign-in provides you with many benefits. Just visit www.network4success.com for more detail. That's network4success.com. If you have a successful business and would like to participate in a future program, call 575-RESULT-6 at any time, day or night. That is 575-RESULT-6. Our program, The Leading Edge of Supply Chain Management, was brought to you by Supply Chain Optimizers. SCO is a logistics company known for providing personalized, end-to-end cost-saving tools and techniques focused on improving the hundreds of opportunities firms have hidden within their supply chain activities. If you want to download 15-minute segment podcasts of this program, simply go to www.networkforsuccess.com. That's network, the number 4, success.com. This program was produced and directed by Your Network for Success and is copyrighted as of March 11th, 2013.